We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
This is the best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Good Wednesday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio and ESPN2, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers everywhere. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you. In a day that seems like we're sort of getting back to the idea of things that might be coming back and might be coming back in bunches, right?
You know what came back?
Yeah.
My barber.
Yeah, you look good.
Woo!
I'm not going to lie to you. I walked in and said, you're a good-looking man.
Got to sit in the barber chair yesterday. Now, it wasn't my barber. You know, over time, unfortunately, he's not back. So I had to sit with someone new.
So you're coming off a hiatus of being able to get your hair cut, and it had turned you into a full-blown headband guy.
Oh, I mean,
you were like a different person.
I'm going to keep wearing the headband for a long time.
You look like Matthew McConaughey's dad for a while.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you.
But so dad or brother?
Sure.
Okay.
You come off that hiatus, and you had to immediately break in a new barber.
I did. It was kind of interesting. I've gone to the same guy for probably 10 years, and all of a sudden I'm back, and I'm there, and like he's not there, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, that's a lot of trust.
It is. What do I do? And I'm like, I walk in and get a haircut is what I do.
I'm actually going today and I'm very excited.
Yes.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. Simple thing.
Well, I can say it's different because you're obviously not like me going in to get a buzz cut when I was getting my haircut. So it's a little more involved and the relationship is tested early.
So hair care is back
in
our
back.
Fine state.
Yeah.
And we're getting closer and closer to the idea of how the NBA is going to come back. Again, our Woj, Ramona Shelburne, Dave McMenamin, all reporting over the last day or so that we're getting closer to honing in on what the plan is going to be. These 22 teams, it'll be the 16 playoff teams that are currently seeded 1 through 16 now, although it won't be seeded that way.
It'll be
8-8, East-West, plus another six teams, and they'll try and figure out the schedule to get them playing in. It looks like it's all going to be in the bubble or the incubator or the campus, which is the word.
Let's go campus.
Let's go campus, because that had a better
sports campus, at Disney World.
Down in Disney World. And so they're closer and closer to figuring that out. And Woj on SportsCenter yesterday said the scheduling doing it this way means that the NBA believes if they pull this plan off in any way, shape, or form, there will not be necessary for anyone to look at this season with an asterisk.
That's going to be part, I think, of the test for teams to win a championship. And, you know, we talk about whether there's an asterisk on this season. Is this championship going to be treated differently? And while there's not going to be travel and it's not going to have, you know, the playoffs aren't going to have that grueling nature, but there, I think, will be a different test of the mettle of the players, of getting back into condition, of what teams, get back the chemistry and what they had that had them among the elite. But how about this? How about the teams who stay healthy, not just physically on the floor, but stay free of the coronavirus?
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think one thing generally I'm going to say, you know, the NBA coming back and baseball coming back and MLS doing the smart thing. It looks like they're going to get a deal.
So thank God.
Nobody gets locked out there. And
hug Taylor Twellman.
The NHL first that came back with their format. And the one thing I'm not going to do is, because I know it's been done, is criticize the format coming back. My thought process is, man, this is just the year, right?
Yeah, right.
This is just however it's going to go, just kind of play it out. If people want to look at it differently, you go ahead. If you want to look at it as a legitimate championship, you go ahead. This is just a different year. They're trying to put together, obviously in the pros, they have to work it out with the players and the league and all that, I get. But I'm one of those, I'm not going to criticize any format any sport comes back in for this year, because this is such a throw it away year.
Yeah, no, criticizing format would be, I mean, almost cruel given the circumstances. Like, these leagues are working with whatever they can to try and just get sports back right now. And I think as we've talked through this a bunch of times, what I kind of fall to is you're going to treat it historically like a strike-shortened season, right, which means you're going to mention it every time we talk about this championship. It doesn't delegitimize that they're still going to put the Larry O'Brien and the Stanley Cup up in whatever building ultimately ends up winning this thing, but we're all going to look at it and go, well, yeah, if Major League Baseball ends up playing 70 games as opposed to, you know, their usual bout of games, if the NBA deals with a multiple-month hiatus in the middle, that's the biggest difference to me, right, is this isn't a strike-shortened season where it was we played a lesser amount of games, but we did it all at once. You just took a break in the middle of everything. Right. It is essentially two different seasons right now.
Right. The baseball thing is fascinating on a lot of levels. We'll get to that a little bit later. I mean, records. What if someone hits 400 during a 60-game season? I mean, that's a fascinating discussion we can have
a little bit later.
If and when
it happens. If
they can, you know, have not biblical losses, which we'll get to
a little later.
But the real, one of the interesting things about the NBA plan is it's proposed that the latest they could go, Game 7 of the NBA Finals, would be October 12th.
So starting July 31st and going to October 12th.
Which is a Monday.
October 12th is a Monday, and it's October, so that's during the NFL season.
Yeah.
And if the NFL is going on, there is Monday Night Football. Who's playing?
It's the Saints and the Chargers.
It's Drew Brees. It's in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Drew Brees against the team that drafted him.
Right.
In New Orleans, Monday Night Football, and you can't accuse us of network bias because one will be on ESPN.
We're good either way.
And the other's going to be on ABC. So, I mean, there's a few ancillary things to kind of goof around with. Listen, we understand it's still very serious out there and what's going on. And believe me, in about 25 minutes, we're going to get to some comments made by an NFL coach that, I mean, are you kidding me of how ridiculous it sounds? With everything going on. But there is that Monday Night Football. So if Game 7, it would be October 12th, it would be up against a Monday Night Football game. So it's the old question, which would you watch? But the interesting thing in the NBA is because it's all going on in Orlando, nobody has any home court advantage, and you have a 1 seed and an 8 seed once you break it into conferences. So what's the advantage? Normally, it's your home court advantage.
Yeah.
Well, there's no home court advantage. Some of the things they're talking about to give the higher seeds an advantage, one of them is bringing in their actual hardwood floor from their arena.
Yeah.
So they would have the feel of their arena floor. Another is, and I know you have a bunch as well, Trey, another is getting the higher seed gets their choice of Disney Resort that they stay in. I kid you not. Yeah. This is some of the things they're talking about, and there's more.
Those are sort of like, you know, creature comforts.
Yeah.
They're actually talking about changing the game on the floor. For example, the higher seed being awarded, these are all being discussed.
Right,
it's been finalized yet. The higher seed being awarded the first possession of the second, third, and fourth quarter. The higher seed being allowed to designate one player to be whistled for 7 fouls. Like just a guy go out there, just bloody somebody, you know what I mean? Hack-a-Shack guy, basically, is going to be on there. The higher seed being able to receive an extra coach's challenge. I mean, these are literal things that they're talking about doing to give the team that had the higher record during the regular season and the better seeding somewhat of a competitive advantage. Now, as guys who played on a pretty high level, both of you, are you okay with those kind of things? Because one is creature comforts, right? Those are
make things
easier for the team that's better. This is legitimately changing the competition on the field of play.
I'm good if I'm one of the good teams.
Well, that's exactly right.
Right?
Where am I in this?
Like, listen, we're at 9:30 this morning. We're getting ready to talk to Bucks head coach Mike Budenholzer, who will be one of the teams that potentially benefits from these things. So what would he be looking for?
Bring Spotted Cow down from Wisconsin.
I know what he'd be looking for. Giannis signs a Supermax.
Yeah, exactly.
He has to sign the Supermax deal and stay with us. But seriously, I mean, I don't know, Trey. That's a really good question because there's part of me that says, just play the game.
Right.
And there's another part of me that says, all right, you're the 1 seed for a reason. You should get something more than the lower seeds. But then I also go to, well, this is kind of an odd year, so we just play it out. So let's do what we should do. Let's let you do the work.
Throw it out to the masses.
Okay? At Golic and Wiggle. They are taking, you know, some options here. What would you give the higher seeds? What kind of, whether off-court or on-court advantage, should they get, you know, with this system going on? Because it is amazing some of the things they're talking about.
The lower seed has to play in pants.
I mean, yeah.
The higher seed can wear shorts. The lower seed has to play in their warm-ups.
All And you would have to pick it out, Mike. All first edition sneakers of some sneakers made years ago.
I was going to say, some team has to play in all brand new sneakers. Yeah. The other gets to have theirs broken in.
No. 8 seed plays barefoot.
Right? I mean,
the list of things are fascinating.
For 20 seconds, you can exercise the green mushroom clause, which gives you one extra player for just 30 seconds of encore time.
Like Mario Kart?
Yeah.
But they truly are talking about something. So Mike Budenholzer, this is going to be great because he's going to be a 1 seed.
Right.
He is going to be a 1 seed, so I really want to know from if you could pick one thing, on-court thing, that you would like the advantage
on
to.
Or off-court. You could, whatever you want. What advantage do you want
spotted
as a 1-4 seed?
Spotted cow. Bring that spotted cow down to Florida, baby. That's what we're talking about. So that's on Twitter. Let us know because I love that they're thinking about this.
I love that they're thinking about
this. I'm not sure if I'm a competitor how I'd feel about it, but I love that the NBA is actually going through the process.
How about you're
going
to send an advanced guy down to start looking at resorts too, which is the best resort.
What a good job. Hey, check out the best hotel.
That's awesome.
Best meals, best restaurants, best everything.
That is just awesome.
That is absolutely cool. We want to hear from you on that. But coming up, as college sports returns, some teams are dealing with what some call a nightmare scenario, and we'll get into that.
Golic
and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr. Boy, ain't that the truth. Golic and Wingo here with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here, also on Sirius XM Channel 80 and your smart speakers. So I want to read you guys something that is literally 2 weeks old. 2 weeks ago. This is the situation the NFL found themselves in trying to address and adapt the Rooney Rule.
Right.
Basically trying to incentivize... The thought process was to incentivize teams to hire more minorities in positions of power, whether it would be a head coach, a coordinator position, or as a general manager. Troy Vincent, executive vice president of the NFL, quote, "The facts are we have a broken system, and we are looking to implement things to change direction of where we're going. And it's been south, not a gradual south, but a direct south. So the fight continues there." And the point he's making is just a few years ago, there were 8 minority head coaches in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Now there are only 4. So just 2 weeks ago, the NFL as an entity, as a business, realized we're not doing a good enough job in promoting and hiring minority in positions of power. So keep that in a backdrop for context for what you're about to hear. This is Vic Fangio, Denver Broncos head coach, in a Broncos presser on a Zoom call, sort of addressing everything that's been going on in this country and the outrage over the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. And we've seen what that has sparked, not only in this country, but across the world, some of the demonstrations. Here's what Vic Fangio had to say about racism in the NFL.
I think our problems in the NFL along those lines are minimal. We're a league of meritocracy. You earn what you get. You get what you earn. I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL. You know, we live in a great atmosphere. Like I alluded to earlier, we're lucky. We all live together, joined as one for one common goal, and we all intermingle and mix tremendously. You know, if society reflected an NFL team, we'd all be great.
So there's a lot to unpack there, and it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Look, I think I understand the point that Vic was trying to make, but I don't see how you can say there is no issue with minorities in the NFL 2 weeks after the league has admitted we have a problem.
See, and I guess it's where you look at it, because if you look at, and it was somebody did tweet it to me and said, I know you're going to talk about Vic Fangio, but also look at what Pat Mahomes said. And Pat Mahomes directed it more at Patrick Mahomes. Remember, his dad played in Major League Baseball.
Yes.
Pat said, I grew up in a locker room. And he went on in a long statement, but he basically said, I wish the country could learn from the injustices that we have witnessed and become more like a locker room where everyone is accepted. He talked about a locker room. And, Mike, we've been in locker rooms, and we have, you know, there are everything from race, creed, color, everything in there that, and I do think, and you know, I've talked about Bill Curry in the huddle of how you do get that brotherhood, in the locker room. So if you're talking about the locker room, I could see it one way. But, you know, and I guess maybe I would need to hear the context of the question asked to Vic Fangio. Was it about players? But I hear him say the NFL. And my God, the NFL couldn't be more behind. I mean, you just mentioned from 8 minority head coaches to 4, there's 2 offensive coordinators that are African-American, 2 front office as well. I mean, and oh, by the way, now, and this was before Pat Mahomes got in the league, you had a player do a peaceful protest, you know, and was blackballed by the owners.
Yes.
By the owners.
Not the league, by the owners.
Not the other players.
Yes.
But by the owners. So the locker room is, I think, one group, but then there is the NFL of what we're seeing. And remember, owners hire head coaches, or they put GMs in position, of which there's only a couple of color, to hire head coaches. So I'm sorry, Vic, to say if you're talking about the whole NFL that there is not an issue, I would disagree. There is an issue that even the league admitted that there was this issue.
I you're 100% right on this, because we've had this conversation. Herm talked about it yesterday, the locker room, where you can hash out, you can have all kinds of uncomfortable conversations and you find a way to get along. That's one part of it, and I think that's what Vic is addressing. But to your point, and Junior, we know this, that you can't just blanket that and say the NFL doesn't have a problem.
So, and again, even more so, and Bomani Jones brought this up, if you look at Vic Fangio's path to where he got now, to how long he had to wait for a head job, all these different things, you can look at it kind of like we talked about with Dabo the other day and say, well, based on, we were to just go the myopic route of saying, based on just the way that this guy has gone about things, you could concoct a way in your mind where you go, well, yeah, of course he believes that. He believes he has lived out that idea of a meritocracy in that form. But obviously, this is not a sample size of just Vic Fangio's experience, and that is not how we judge, as you put it, guys put it, the NFL, and that was what was referenced in this. The LA Times, we're getting ready to talk, an article about Anthony Lynn, who talked to LZ Granderson that was in the LA Times, and one of the quotes from Anthony Lynn was, I know when you look at 32 quarterbacks in the National Football League, Colin Kaepernick could have been one of the 32. If not, he could have at least been a quality backup. For me, being an African-American head coach, this is tough when asked about Colin not being involved in the league, as you mentioned. So this statement comes on the same day that we saw in a paper another coach in this league, an African-American coach in this league, say, yeah, of course Colin should be in this league. Of course, if this were a true meritocracy, he would be playing football. And that's the thing is, we can all sit here and laud the admirable qualities and these ideals that we love about sports. They're not all ever 100% true. Like,
correct.
No, the NFL, even with greatness, isn't a perfect meritocracy. No sports is. There's politics that goes on in all of this. And especially at this level, we've seen the disproportionate effects that, you know, the process has on minorities and their abilities to get hired.
Yeah, and some of the quotes from Anthony Lynn to LZ Granderson in this article in the LA Times. He said, I've read some good statements, but I'm pretty pissed off right now, but I want to do something. I just want to put out a statement because it's the right thing to do. I want change. So I guess it starts with having the conversation, talking things out. In 1992, I remember watching L.A. burn after the videotape of Rodney King's beating by L.A. police is what he's referring to there. And here we are in 2020, and I'm watching it again, and it just hits me, nothing has changed. And that's sort of the context that Anthony Lynn is talking about.
And I think with this, like, Vic Fangio, I don't want to do too much excusing for his statement. He said what he said. We're all in charge of picking our words carefully, and so he has to deal with the repercussions that come with that. During a 16-minute session, he also said that he's encouraged his players to protest. There are other things that were a part of this, and there are other things that need to be talked about in this. But there's also what Vic and what Patrick Mahomes referenced there, this idea that in a football locker room, all of the, you can have conversations that are different. There is a little more. We have all learned. I mean, I talked with Dan Orlovsky about this the other day. Someone who came from a pretty homogenous area like I did here in, you know, Avon bleeping Connecticut, and didn't encounter a lot of black people, a lot of people of color during my, you know, the younger period of my life. Once I started playing in sports in high school and at the college level and beyond, you're exposed to a lot more. You meet a lot of people from different backgrounds and you learn a lot of stuff. So there's a ton of value in that. But to say that there's no, you know, it's a league of meritocracy, that he doesn't see discrimination in the league, there's maybe a difference of opportunity within it and still players experiencing discrimination in their lives.
Correct.
Players who were a part of the league experience discrimination. And so I'm sure there's a lot of the recoil in that. Of, in addition to the hiring practices for coaches, for people in positions of power, there's also probably players that are saying, yeah, I might not be not given a job on the field because you can't deny my ability, but I'm still treated at times very differently in my life, and that's still right. Something that falls under the umbrella.
Well, we've always heard so many athletes say, yeah, when I'm here, I'm treated as equal, but when I leave, I'm just another black man in a car.
So well, that's the thing. Nobody knows that I'm this football player right. or this professional athlete. The luck, listen, the luck, and let's also understand that no place is perfect either.
Correct.
You know, in the locker room, there's plenty of, there can be divide in a locker room as well.
There were a lot of uncomfortable conversations surrounding Colin Kaepernick's protest that occurred in the locker room for that reason.
Yeah. By the way, the question Vic was asked about that, he was asked about player activism in the NFL was the sort of the
and again he did say he definitely encourages, you know, the protests and stuff. Like I said, we're taking one of the statements. It was a longer interview and there are some things he said in there that certainly merit being talked about as well. That they're really, most coaches out there have said they've been, Jim Harbaugh you know, at Michigan
in Ann Arbor
walked, you know, with some of his players as well. So but there are parts of it that just struck me with Vic. Vic has been around this league. He first got into coaching in the NFL in 1986. So 34 years he's been around and seen a whole lot. And this is back to in the day there, because that's right around the time when I got in, where you weren't, you know, a black quarterback. Black quarterback, what do you mean? Right. You know, I played with Warren Moon, who ended up going to Canada first because black quarterback in the NFL, come on. I mean, we know where that has gone, and that was years ago, and we're worked up to where we are now. But he's seen a lot in the NFL. That's why I was a little surprised from that side of it to hear from him, for a guy that's been around the league and has seen some of the positive changes, and there have been bad ones as well, but of the positive changes going forward. But still, you can't say there isn't some issue overall in the NFL with that.
There is a huge difference, you're right, in saying that the locker room is this great place that we can learn from, people can come together.
Which is true.
In lauding that and saying, I don't see racism or discrimination in the NFL.
Yeah.
That's a pretty broad statement, even with, and I understand you can go on and explain all these number of things, and he addressed, you know, the George Floyd case individually, and he said those officers should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, all those things. But we know, and Vic knows, he's been around this long enough to know that what you say can end up in a headline, that what you say and your words all have to be important and all have to be chosen well. And so to say, I don't see racism or discrimination in the NFL, that's going to be just a hard no as soon as it comes out of your mouth.
Literally, the NFL said the exact opposite 2 weeks ago. We have a problem. We need to fix it. So that's one part. But I want to get back to Anthony Lynn, because I thought the article that LZ did with him was absolutely phenomenal. And here was LZ talking about the article and the interview he did with Anthony on NFL Live yesterday, basically saying he was surprised at how candid and transparent Anthony was when the two got together.
I didn't know how open and transparent he was going to be. When you're an African-American head coach in the NFL, you know, you're juggling a lot of balls, some that a lot of fans don't even witness. And so I was concerned that it wasn't going to be an in-depth conversation, but I was shocked to see his candor, to be quite honest with you. He was very forthcoming about his own experiences, about Colin Kaepernick, about how the NFL handled it, and more importantly, about what he thinks needs to happen next in terms of social justice reform. So it was a wide-ranging conversation. It lasted a couple of hours.
You know, it was a great conversation. He was very open in the conversation and basically saying, when he talked about, I just don't want some comment out there, you know, because that's where we are now. Put a statement out. Why didn't you put a statement out? What did you say in your statement? Yeah. Let's pick up. What do you mean you didn't put a statement out? You didn't put a statement out. Now you put a statement out. Knicks. So everybody is kind of gauging everybody's statement. And as you've mentioned, Mike, it's the easiest thing in the world to do is put out a statement condemning what you saw. And then Anthony Lynn is like, okay, now what? You know, let's go somewhere, because part of the interview, he said, you know, I remember in 1992 watching L.A. burn. And here we are in 2020, and I'm watching it again, so nothing has changed. I mean, I guess, you know, that's his point. And he even said, I need to go out and do more. I need to get involved more to help change more. He was very candid in this article.
And I think that's the thing that we can all take away is, introspection is the goal right now and figuring out what more you can do. Like, keep in mind, Anthony Lynn saying he's the guy that can do more. Anthony Lynn, who is the guy who went to Africa and built a school
right
over there for members of the Maasai tribe, like a kindergarten through third grade school, I believe, over in Africa to help people over there. Like a guy who is incredibly giving. And he talked about being a part of the Chargers organization that he says works a lot in that area right. to help do things better. And he still looked at his situation and said, there's more I need to be doing to be creating a better life for my kids, for the next generation, for everybody involved in this. And so I think that's kind of a reminder to us all. And that's what leadership is supposed to be, right? A signal that, all right, if the best among us are willing to do something, why not me?
Right.
If he doesn't have an excuse, someone who's already going above and beyond in so many ways, why do I have an excuse in all this? And that's kind of the question everyone has to ask themselves.
And all of that is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So something we've talked about the last couple of days, everybody releasing a statement. Are you releasing a statement? What are you saying in your statement? Why haven't you released a statement? One of those teams that had not released a statement about what had gone on across the country was, of course, the New York Knicks. And it was an internal memo that ESPN obtained, but basically saying, hey, you know, We're not talking about this. Our opinion is no greater than anybody else's. Which
we are not qualified qualified to speak on this than anyone else.
And so, some employees were ticked.
Yeah.
And had a meeting with Dolan about it.
As you might imagine, things changed pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Less than 24 hours after sending that email to employees stating the company was, quote, not more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters, Knicks owner James Dolan emphasized his stance denouncing racism against anyone. I will continue to do as much as I can to help make our community even better. I know you will also. So amazingly, suddenly, he felt qualified to have an opinion.
And Dan, it was actually like, it was the equivalent, and I heard Pablo Torre, who we might hear from in a second, describe this. It was essentially a players only meeting.
With staff members.
But with, not with Dolan. It was not with Dolan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a meeting held about Dolan and about what, our company not speaking on this, but it was essentially a meeting with the employees and some of the staffers who were upset without Dolan. And,
so is it like too late to put out a statement? I mean, once you say we're not going to put out a statement and then you put out a statement because basically you've been shamed into putting out a statement.
Yeah. Wow. Listen, you mentioned it. Here's Pablo on Spain and Company yesterday talking about whatever it is Dolan just said.
It didn't really do much. You know, the name George Floyd still not mentioned. Black people really specifically not mentioned. Certainly a lot of clarity about we are against racism, but to me, this was a response to the public response, to his lack of public response, and it didn't really do much, especially because this still is not a public response. And instead, it seems to be a strategically leaked second letter that tries to clean up some of the stuff without really addressing any of the substance of the anger in response to the first attempts.
And what's the underlying theme here? It's James Dolan, so he'll screw it up.
Yeah.
Right? As far as Knicks fans are concerned.
I don't know if it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, but man, he has delivered on that front.
Yeah.
And you know what? I've seen over the last couple of days everyone talking about, we brought it up, that James Dolan deserves credit for hiring a number of, you know, black staffers.
Absolutely does, yes.
And giving opportunity and providing jobs. And again, those things are all true, but it's interesting once we heard, and Pablo brought it up, about it being staffers in Madison Square Garden who were upset about this, who were looking at the situation saying, what are we going to say? Or NBA players looking at this and being upset about it. The part of this that we forget, because we all look at it as we're just grading papers. We're looking out here, what's your statement, what's that, is part of this is about leadership. And you have people that you are leading who are vulnerable members of the population in many of these different ways who are looking up all of a sudden and going, all right, wait a minute. What are we standing for? Like, this isn't just abstracts we're talking about anymore. This is a group of people that were looking up at the leadership in there and saying, well, what are we stand for? Because we work here too, and we've got to answer to an outside world about the place that employs us.
Well, not only that, but the Knicks are trying to recruit people, right? They've been trying to recruit people to get there and come and sign that big free agent for a long time. You better understand the people you're trying to recruit.
Yeah.
And by doing things like this, it's not helping. I want you to listen to Malik Andrews, our NBA reporter. This was before his clarification of his non-clarification and a non-statement that wasn't a statement. It was before all of that. But basically saying, NBA players are watching.
There's been a lot of frustration and disappointment, and I'm going to start with within the Knicks organization. You know, there's a lot of people who felt like this was an opportunity where sports teams have been making statements about what is going on in the world as a profession that is built on majority black men. And the Knicks were one of two teams as of last night that hadn't made a statement. The other was the Spurs, but Greg Popovich gave a very in-depth interview. But it's not just the Knicks that are frustrated with this sentiment. I've heard from presidents, from GMs, from players of other teams also getting in contact with me saying, what's going on over there? That doesn't seem right and that doesn't sit well with us, especially in light of the fact, Sage, that Dennis Smith Jr., a player for the Knicks, was out protesting in the streets with other people about the death of George Floyd. And so this really is upsetting a lot of people around the NBA.
It's not surprising that it's the Knicks, but I mean, my God, you're trying, the players you are trying to recruit are looking at you and saying, why would I want to go work for you? I mean,
on a day when we saw Ben and Jerry's and Tom Herman out there swinging the hammer to look at this and to look at how, I mean, really what complete lack of teeth a statement like this had, the sort of listlessness of the whole process. You're right, especially for a league that is predominantly black, and sports are looked to lead in ways that are sometimes unfair and sometimes, you know, we say not maybe the way to go, but they're looked to lead, and it was a massive failure.
As is always the case, I'll take a pint of Ben and Jerry's over a Knicks ticket. Coming up, another sports owner in a big market getting criticized for a much different remark. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, no doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
Delighted to be joined now by Auden Tate, Bengals wide receiver. Auden, thanks for being with us this morning. First of all, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good, you know, just getting through all this, but I'm feeling good.
Well, we appreciate you coming on with us, and we appreciate what we saw with you and some other receivers in Tampa going out and cleaning up some of the places that were hit hard by some of the looting and the rioters there. What was it about you that said, I need to go out there and be a part of the solution here and help rebuild?
I was just eating dinner with the fam, and I just got a text from my brother Ray Ray and some of the other, you know, guys I know around the Tampa in a group message just talking about we can go out there and clean it up, like, because we just wanted to find some way to help in some way, and that was just the best way to help at that specific time, so that's just what we did.
As far as, and we've seen this happen in other places around the country as well, people going out and cleaning up. Do you think with what's going on with some of the protests, certainly there's been many peaceful protests. Unfortunately, there's been some damage done as well. Overall, do you feel like the message about George Floyd is getting lost at all, or do you still think that is in the forefront with most people?
I won't say the message is necessarily getting lost. I just think, you know, people are just, they're just kind of getting fed up, and, you know, a big group of people angry at the same time, you know, it ain't going to be good. So I just think people just, you know, they're just angry right now. You know, they got the right to be. So, you know, just finding a way to get that anger out in the right way towards, you know, the people that we need change from, you know, is the biggest thing for me.
Do you feel pressure, and we see this a lot of times with athletes and people that have this platform, do you feel like there's a pressure or a responsibility for you and your other teammates right now to kind of be out in the forefront and helping lead during this?
I wouldn't say necessarily pressure or anything like that, because, you know, at the end of the day, we still sport players and entertainers, you know, that's what we're doing, but I mean, we definitely got a responsibility. We got this big platform, so, you know, why not use it in a good way, you know, while you got it?
Well, certainly you and some of the other players, including Ray Ray McLeod, you mentioned it, Bills wide receiver, were out there doing that and cleaning up after some of the things that went wrong in Tampa. But as we sit here, one of the things we've sort of been dealing with, Auden, is trying to understand and be empathetic to people whose lives have been different than ours and have been on different paths. And I think one of the things that I'm very hopeful that will come out of all of this is we need to understand everybody has a different path in life, and we need to understand that their difference is not the same journey that we've been on. What do we need to know that maybe we don't understand as a society that we need to embrace?
I say just love and just understanding, you know, no prejudgment, just everybody just looking at each other as the same, you know, getting, you know, this me against you mentality out of here and just get it together type vibe together, something like that. But yeah, I think it's just too much, there's too much hate in the world at this time, to be honest.
Auden Tate joining us again, and I mentioned 23 years old because we have seen a lot of players, professional athletes in that age range really being active in this. And Auden, Anthony Lynn, the head coach for the Los Angeles Chargers, I'm still saying San Diego, telling my age, has talked about, okay, the statements are coming out, people are doing things now, but then there needs to be action after that. What do you think some of the action, especially where you're from there in Tampa, what actions need to be taken when the protests are over and everybody kind of gets back to whatever their normal life may be to help this not happen in the future?
I just say just being present, you know, in any way, you know, we can, you know, any community building type thing, you know, us being present, you know, any protest, us being present, just, you know, being there is also, you know, using your voice, being there, you know, with the people, you know, just standing with them. So like even last night, you know, some of us went out to a silent protest over by Franklin Manor, you know, just being present out there, you know, even though you may not have nothing to say or you may not know how to express it, being there is enough at that time if you don't know exactly what to say or how to express it. So that's all I say.
Absolutely, and we've seen a lot of athletes take the opportunity to be there with the people and be out in those groups and in the part of those protests. I'm curious, though, Auden, you guys haven't had, you know, a normal offseason this year. It's been, you know, the virtual offseasons for a lot of people and trying to find ways to get together when there's time. I don't know if you've had a chance to get together with him much or not, but Joe Burrow, your guy's new quarterback, your rookie quarterback, came out with a pretty strong statement at the beginning of all of this. What did it mean to see that from a guy who hasn't played a down for you guys yet, but is certainly going to come in and be a big part of your team?
I think he's, you know, it's definitely, you know, difficult, you know, with the Zoom and all that stuff going on. But like I say, Joe Burrow, he's very, like, he's very confident. He's very, like, well-spoken. So even in the meetings, you know, he speaks up. You know, he doesn't really waver his voice at all. So he's very confident. You can tell he's studying the stuff and knows a lot of it already. So, I mean, I'm real confident in the dude already, and I haven't even really met him face-to-face.
Auden Tate with us, Bengals wide receiver. We've seen a lot of players and coaches get together and say they've talked to their players about this in the light of what went on, George, and they want to have open conversations. What kind of conversations have you had with your teammates or Bengals coaches about this?
After all the stuff happened, you know, our coach opened it up for stuff to talk about. I don't really want to go into a specific, you know, I want to keep what, you know, we say between us, but our coach definitely did bring it up, and he's, you know, he's understanding about the situation, and he even wants to know. So, you know, that's a positive from being a player on the team.
It certainly is. Well, listen, Auden, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Obviously, there's still a lot that we all need to learn, and we appreciate you being part of trying to help your community after some of the things that went south and being out there with some other NFL players and cleaning up after some of the looting in Tampa. Thanks for being with us this morning, and thank you for helping.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. It's
very interesting where that went.
We are delighted to talk to our next guest. We've talked to him many times before and hope to talk to him many times in the future. It's a Pro Football Hall of Fame head coach, player, Tony Dungy. Tony, thanks for being with us this morning. First and foremost, hope you and yours are well and safe in everything that's going on in this country lately.
We are. Thank you very much, Trey and Mike. We're down here in Tampa, Florida. We have not been hit too hard by the COVID. So we are safe and healthy and really feeling blessed for that.
Certainly are. And that's one thing we've been dealing with. And then there's been the outcry over the killing of George Floyd by that Minneapolis police officer. And so many players, Tony, using their platform, whether it's NBA, NFL, even college players, using their voices to make a statement, something that was not done with this sort of volume in recent memory, but it seems like players are really finding their voice. What do you make of so many players being so active on the social front these days?
Well, I think it's great. I remember in 1977 when I came to the Steelers, and Art Rooney Sr. was our owner, and he sat down with every rookie when you made the team, and he talked to you about being part of the community, welcomed you to the team, but said, hey, you represent the Steelers, you represent the city of Pittsburgh. I want you to move to the city, make it a better place to live, be part of the city. So that's not just going to community centers and not just, you know, having a good afternoon with kids. That's part of it. But part of it is using your platform and using your voice in times like this. And I applaud the players. And I think the actual video of George Floyd, it was so viral, it made people want to react and feel like, hey, we've got to do something. I've had calls from a number of players over the last week. What can we do? What can my wife and I do? What can we do as a team? So I applaud that, and hopefully we can work in the right direction.
So along those lines, Tony, I know you were told that by Rooney's, and even when I got in the league a little after that, that was in the area where a lot of us, we lived where we played, so we just made that our home. Players today, not so much. You know, in the off season, it's a longer off season. They have all the way until April, so they'll have lived somewhere else. So what would you tell players of today if you still had that group in front of you about what they could do today, even if they have a couple of different places where they call home?
Yeah, and you have to start at home. You know, if that ends up being a different residence, hey, start there. You utilize your voice, make your presence known there. Certainly, you have time to do it in your city. We all have off days in the NFL, community service days. You can be around and be a presence there. But if you're 6 months away in some other location, be part of that community and make that a better place to live as well.
Talking to Tony Dungy with us, Pro Football Hall of Fame. Hall of Famer with us here on Golic and Wingo. And Tony, I'm curious, you mentioned what you would tell players about being in that community. What have some of those conversations been like with people that have reached out to you? You're a mentor for so many people, and I know you mentioned getting phone calls from a lot of those guys. What have those conversations been? Have they been venting? Have they been pointed forward? What has that been like for you?
Most guys want to know what they can do, how they can help, and I think we've got to, this is a spiritual battle, and I think we've got to win it with our spirit. And we've got to make ourselves present. We've got to be empathetic, and we've got to do what we can do to help out. And that's what I've told most of these players and coaches. Hey, first of all, start at home. Start with your family. I can remember, Mike, 1968. I was 12 years old, and this was exactly what was going on. Dr. King had gotten killed. Robert Kennedy, I'm talking to my dad. What's going on? And the first thing he said was, you know what, there's a lot of people out there that hate. They hate for all different reasons, and we can't control that. But in our house, this is how we're going to treat people. This is what we're going to do. We're not going to judge people by what they look like or what they say. We're going to judge everybody fairly by what they do. So that stayed with me the rest of my life. And so my dad impacted four kids who now impacted 20 other kids. And that's what we got to do. So I told those players, start there, start at home, and then start in your sphere of influence, in the locker room, in your city, where your off-season job may be, whatever. Have those conversations and be part of the solution, but do it in a loving, respectful way.
And that's for a societal view of how you can try and change the world around you. And then there's what you can do in your job and in your profession, as Tony Dungy is with us. And Tony, I want you to listen to something that Broncos head coach Vic Fangio said yesterday, among many things,
right,
he said during a Zoom call with Denver reporters. The basis of the question that we're playing the response to, he was asked about the evolution of activism by players in the NFL. And here's what Vic had to say.
I think our problems in the NFL along those lines are minimal. We're a league of meritocracy. You earn what you get. You get what you earn. I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL. You know, we live in a great atmosphere. Like I alluded to earlier, we're lucky. We all live together, joined as one for one common goal, and we all intermingle and mix tremendously. You know, if society reflected an NFL team, we'd all be great.
And we've had discussion this morning, Tony, that I think the point he was trying to make there was the locker room. And we all know that the locker room is a place where you can have a lot of uncomfortable conversations with people from many different backgrounds and try and work together. But you mentioned that you played for the Steelers and what Mr. Rooney told you. And it was just 2 weeks ago that Troy Vincent said, we have a broken system with only four minority head coaches in the NFL, where just a couple of years ago it was eight. And you were one of those minority coaches not too long ago when you last coached for the Indianapolis Colts. So it's kind of a jarring statement on one level to say he doesn't see there's a problem when the NFL has admitted we do have a problem in hiring and promoting minorities in positions of power.
You know, if you listen to that statement, there's a lot of truth in it. Vic talked about it being a meritocracy, and it is, and in the locker room and on the field. And I think we had 29 African-Americans drafted in the first round out of 32 players. So, yes, there is progress there. And, yes, there is working together. And a football locker room can be one of the greatest places in the world where you see people coming together from all different types of backgrounds, chasing a common goal. So that is true. But to say there is no racism and no problem, I think really is not recognizing the situation. As you said, you know, the league has talked about having 70 to 75% African-American players and no black president, just a couple of black general managers. There are issues there. And it is not a complete meritocracy, even though it's a great place. And I think the same thing could be said of our country. It is a great country. We have a lot of things going on. We have a lot of positive. But let's not say there's nothing wrong.
I completely agree. And we're waiting to hear from Denver Bronco players and or maybe some of their coaching staff. And imagine there's going to be a conversation going on at some point there when players can get back together and actually get to play the game of football, something we're going to get to you in a few minutes.
Yeah, I've talked to some people in Denver in different places in that organization, and the players are shocked at how white it is other than the locker room. So, you know, there are some issues, and we just have to understand that, and we've got to see it from different points of view sometimes.
So the one thing, Tony, and we've asked it right when this thing started, as we keep saying, three white guys who are like, okay, what can we do? You know, and basically the thought was listen, and where you can be active, but listen and understand. But for you, you mentioned the 60s. We had Herm Edwards on who mentioned the 60s. We had Anthony Lynn talked about, who's not as old as you guys, but going back to 92 and what he saw. I mean, what you and guys like Herm have seen over and over and over again outside the world of sports, in the world of sports, and what you have already said to us, you must feel like you've said 10 times already in other situations. Why and how can it be different this time?
Well, it has to be a heart change, Mike. We do have to see the whole playing field, and we can't just look at our little corner. And we've got to empathize with other people. This is not going to be battled and won by, hey, I can throw a brick through a window and get your attention, and then you can come back on the government side with a bigger gun and keep me under control. That is not going to do it. We've got to sit down. We've got to look at each other, and we've got to have a heart for our country and say we're going to make this the best we can be, and we've got to listen to each other and try to solve this together. And that's what's going to happen. We had a lot of this going on in the 60s, and I think Dr. King said it best. And really, that was my mentor, that, hey, we come and we sit down with people and we show them that we care about each other, and we'll get some things done. We'll make some progress.
Tony, I'm curious, and this is kind of more micro back on the football front, but you brought it up, the perception that, you know, guys were shocked at just how white the building was on the front office side in Denver, and I'm sure that could be said in other places. We did mention at the beginning of this the look at revamping the Rooney Rule and some of the things that have gone along with it. From the NFL side, as they look to be better in that going forward, I know we had a lot of solutions that were sort of offered up, and some will be used going forward and some won't. As you look at it now, what do you think are ways that the NFL can improve itself in that regard that might actually have a chance of working in ways the Rooney Rule hasn't at this point?
Well, I think we have to look at everything and examine everything. And we have to understand that it is not necessarily okay if our entire medical staff is white, our entire ticket office is white, if our finance staff is white, if, you know, everything other than the locker room is white, and we say, well, we've got a meritocracy and we've got everything is just fine. That has an impact on people. And so I think we've got to look at the whole structure, and we've got to see how we can foster a change of heart. And it is going to not be through legislation, I don't believe. I don't think it's something you can say, hey, we put this rule in, we interview this number of people, and that's going to make it work. We've got to get to the point where people understand that the best thing for our country, the best thing for our community, the best thing for our team is to have that change of heart and to try to be inclusive.
Along those lines, Tony, does most of that, or a high percentage, if not all, does that fall on the owners?
I think it does. I mean, I look at the places that I've worked, and in Pittsburgh, and I saw how it was run and what a difference that meant to Mr. Rooney. I worked for Lamar Hunt in Kansas City, and I saw it operate the same way. I saw it operate the same way with Jim Irsay in Indianapolis. And when you set the tone that way from the top, it's going to happen. And when you have owners that have their eyes open and that are willing to look at it honestly, that's when I think it's going to make a difference. So I think it does in the NFL. It's going to start with the 32 owners, not with the commissioner, not with the league office, but with those individual owners.
Well, that's going to be a process that they have to go through on the front office side, and we'll see what happens there. Meanwhile, Tony, as we're talking to Tony Dungy, Pro Football Hall of Famer, we got to figure out a way to get people together and play football, right? I mean, Adam Schefter tweeting out this morning that in all likelihood, there hasn't been an official statement, but in all likelihood that the first time these teams will be getting together to begin preparing for what we believe will be the start of the 2020 football season on time, September 10th, that weekend, will be training camp from a guy who has been through the rigors and taken teams to Super Bowls and won a Super Bowl. How different will the preparation be, knowing that you had no off-season workouts with the team in general, no rookie mini camps, no veteran mini camps or OTAs, and boom, training camp, here we go?
Well, it can be done because, as Michael told you, that's the way we used to do it.
Right.
But it was a long training camp, and we had 6 preseason games and a lot of work to get you ready. We didn't have those off-season programs, and you didn't get the learning done in April, May, and June, and July. So it could be done, but it's going to be a process, and I think the veteran teams are going to have a little edge if it goes that way.
How much of a disadvantage will a team like Carolina have with a head coach and Matt Rhule coming from the college ranks as opposed to other coaches that have come from the pro ranks?
I don't think it'll be that much disadvantage coming from the college ranks, but the fact that Matt is new and trying to put a new system in, and he's going to have a new quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater, that you know, trying to put that together quickly and get that chemistry and for your quarterback to understand what he's doing and to get that chemistry with his teammates and to also know what the coach wants. I think that's going to be very difficult. We're down here in Tampa, and we're super excited that Tom Brady's here and Rob Gronkowski. But Tom Brady has, in my mind, he's always been that highly technical, precise guy who's had that great chemistry with his group, and whether he's going to be able to develop that without working with them, what remains to be seen.
Tony, I'm curious because that's obviously one set of challenges, but you've got a Hall of Fame caliber player, a great coach, and certainly a guy who's used to being a collaborative mind in Bruce Arians versus some of these teams that are going to bring rookies in. Let's say Cincinnati, you're bringing Joe Burrow in, the number one overall pick, likely going to be your starter. How are you approaching all of a sudden bringing in a rookie who hasn't played a down in this league and now may have to do so with all of these disadvantages?
Well, I hate to say it to the Cincinnati fans, but you're going to have to just chalk this year up as a learning year. Peyton Manning came in as prepared as you can be, and had the whole offseason and had Hall of Fame guys, Marshall Faulk and Marvin Harrison. He won three games and threw a record number of interceptions with all that going for him. Joe Burrow has, he's got a long road ahead of him. They've got to put him in and play him, but it's not going to be an easy year.
Now, Peyton is trying every year to give that record to somebody else.
He is.
He's clinging onto that one for a while, maybe. Yeah. So just the reality of it, Tony, knowing what we know about COVID-19 and the pandemic, you know, Herm Edwards was on with us earlier and said, you can't social distance and be a good football player. What do you think we need to know about this disease that we can start training camp on time and we can be in a situation where we got 50 plus guys on a roster banging against each other on a sideline, plus the support staff and the coaching staff and all those people in one place?
I'm not sure how you do it, really, where we are now. I would not want to be making the rules and trying to figure this thing out. We can all go in with the best intentions, but my question would be, what is going to happen when the Rudy Gobert of the NFL tests positive in the second week of training camp? Then what happens? So that's a question I don't think anybody's prepared to answer, and that's why I think it's going to be difficult to get started.
It will. And, you know, they're going ahead full steam ahead as if they will open week one, and they have the longest runway than anybody.
Yeah.
At some point, we got to start figuring out some answers here. Tony, as
I'm
always,
hoping
we appreciate
we can,
your time.
But,
yeah.
Let me
ask you real quick. Do you believe the season will actually start on time, or do you think there'll be some delay?
I don't think it's going to start on time. I think we're going to play a full 16 games, but I'm not sure we're going to start September 1st. I hope we do. We'll see. And I'd like to just finish with one thing, and I've kind of tweeted it out. Everything that I've sent out on social media is from the Apostle Paul in the Book of Romans. Don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. If there's a message at all, that's it for our country today. Overcome evil with good.
Totally with you 100%
words,
on
Tony.
That. Thanks, Tony. As always, we appreciate your time. Be well and be safe, okay?
All right. Thank you, guys.
Golic and Wingo.
Let's not expect too much. There's only one person out there that's expecting way too much out of this guy too early. We know who that is. It's his father.
I'm Mike Budenholzer, the Bucks head coach, and right now the number one overall seed, the way things would play in the NBA. Coach, thanks for being with us this morning. First and foremost, in light of everything that we've seen go on with the pandemic and the reaction to the killing of George Floyd, how are you today?
I'm doing well. You know, yeah, there's a lot happening in a lot of different areas, but, you know, it's life and challenges, and we're trying to figure it all out, and I'm happy to be on with you guys and, you know, talk about whatever it is you guys want to talk about.
How often, Coach, are you talking to the players as we're getting ready to roll out the rest of this season? What's how often are the conversations?
Yeah, so, you know, the NBA, I think, fortunately, has opened up the practice facilities for voluntary workouts, so you know, we've got a really good participation in our voluntary workouts. And so and we're mostly on a kind of every other day, a Monday, Wednesday, Friday type schedule. But, you know, there's some, you know, do some physical therapy, maybe a little bit of weight training on Tuesday, Thursdays too. So, you know, a lot of guys, you know, you're seeing on a pretty regular basis. And, you know, we have a few that are out of market. So, you know, you get on the phone and visit with them occasionally. And, you know, the weight staff and the sports performance staff is, you know, really closely connected with those guys who aren't in market. But so, you know, there's a lot of good conversations, especially the last 3-4 weeks since the NBA was able to open up their practice facilities for voluntary workouts.
And certainly we'll get to how that translates to the basketball portion of things, as it looks like a plan is slowly starting to come together to get everyone back on the court. But especially with what we know is what's gone on in the last week with everything surrounding the killing of George Floyd, has that been a subject of conversation? Has that been something that either you've addressed with guys on your team or that they've brought up in conversation with you?
Yeah, no, I mean, we're probably like everybody else in our country. It's something that's, you know, I guess needs to be talked about, needs to be discussed. And there's a lot of emotion, a lot of, you know, concern. And it's, you know, something we've talked about on an individual basis. You know, we've talked about it, you know, kind of on a team environment, a team setting. And I think it's a conversation that will continue, you know, through this week. And really, I think we want to hopefully be a team and an organization that can hopefully impact some change and affect change going forward, and take this moment to, you know, think about, you know, how we can all be better, and areas where, you know, maybe change is needed. And is there any way we can help make that change happen?
Yeah, it's certainly the hope that we all have going forward after what we've seen over the last week and the reaction to it. But as we get set, and it looks like, as Mike Budenholzer is with us, as we get set for, it looks like, what will be a resumption of the NBA season with the 16 seeded teams, 1 through 8 in each conference, and then a couple of, few more teams up to 6, I believe, potentially as potential play-in games, to try and figure out those last few seeds in the tournament. Where are you on the idea of what we're hearing about what's being presented on how we're going to go about the resumption and completion of this season?
Yeah, I mean, there's been so much that, you know, has been considered and discussed and, you know, either rumored and leaked, or you actually get to be a, you know, in on the conversation. To me, I would say it feels like, as always, you know, Adam Silver, the commissioner, has done a pretty amazing job of, I think, finding a solution that makes just a lot of sense on a lot of different levels. And he can't, nobody, there's nothing that's going to be perfect, or that, you know, there's always going to be people that maybe have thoughts or differences. But, you know, from my seat, my, you know, just listening and looking at the league as a whole, not just hopefully my own selfish, you know, wants and needs for the Bucks, I think the commissioner and the NBA is settled in a good place. If it does come, you know, that it's, I think, you know, 22 teams and some type of play-in type format, but some games before that, you know, I think it makes sense on a lot of levels where he's landed, if this is the plan that, you know, is approved and kind of put out there sometime in the near future.
And while all the teams will be kind of in the same, you know, bucket here, is it, where do you think your team can be? You're the best record. You'd be the number one seed. And as you're playing these games moving toward the playoffs, how quickly can you get to where you were, if you can at all, to the level you were of play this season?
Yeah, you know, I think it's I think a lot of that, how quickly and or can you get back to that level, I think is going to be partly dictated on how much work your players have been doing during the pandemic. And, you know, we feel like there's a ton of, you know, I would say focus, and there's a hunger with our team, our organization. I think, you know, we feel like we got a special group, and they've been working really hard during this time. It's been challenging. But, you know, I think the more work you put in during these, you know, whatever it's been, 2 months, it feels like, I think maybe more, and when we get going, you know, how do you work? you know, how do you do that efficiently and in a healthy way and get back to as close to, if not better? You know, in some ways teams are going to be, I think there's a lot of risk for injury, but there is also, you know, a potential for everybody to come into this really healthy, you know, and play 7 to 8 games or 5, whatever the commissioner says, and then start the playoffs. You know, it could be, there is certainly a lot of risk for injury, but there is also, I think, an upside where, you know, Giannis is going to be healthy, Chris is going to be healthy, everybody's going to be healthy and, you know, ready to go, you know, which is exciting to think about. You know, maybe the quality of the basketball can be really good.
Mike Budenholzer with us, Milwaukee Bucks head coach. One of the other things that's been floated, and our own Dave McMenamin wrote an article about this,
awesome.
Are some of the ideas from the league to try and reward the top seeds like yourself for the home court advantage that'll no longer exist because all these games will be being played in Orlando in the campus style setting. In a lot of this, we've heard things like even bringing in the home floor from Milwaukee, which we know you guys have a great home court. It looks awesome. So that'd be a cool visual in a lot of this. Maybe adding possessions in certain spots. Is there anything specifically that you would like if you were going to be rewarded for being the top seed in order to mimic the home court advantage you'll no longer get?
Yeah, I know this has kind of been bubbling up the last, you know, few days. It's interesting because I've joked with my GM, John Horst, who does it like an amazing job. And the league has really been good, you know, with the GMs and consulting. Anyways, I've been just so hoping that we actually play the games. I don't care if they even give us the home court advantage. I'm like, just be sure we play. Like, you know, we've got to get to Orlando. We've got to have a chance to play for, you know, a championship or the playoffs. And like, I don't care what they do. You know, it's like we just have such a hungry team and mindset that, yeah, sure, great. Give us an extra timeout. Give us an extra possession. Get whatever the ideas are. I'm all for it. We're obviously, you know, we've done a lot of good work to you know, have a record and be the, you know, number one seed. But I'm just being honest with you guys. I just hope we play, and it feels like we are going to play. And then you get to go out and, you know, if there's nothing, there's nothing. It's, you know, the best team will win, and that's, you know, I think what we all look for.
Let me ask you it this way then, yeah, because these are actual things they're talking about. Of these three choices, and this is what I don't know, from a coaching standpoint, which would be best? You get an extra review, you get a player that gets a 7th foul, or you get possession in the start of the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter. From a coaching standpoint, which of those would work best?
Yeah, I usually bail on any question that's going to put me on the spot with the commissioner. I got to come up with some kind of coach speak. I would say, you know, giving a 7th foul to a player, you know, is pretty impactful when, you know, and the playoffs are usually there's great players and just, you know, some guys that are just so important to their team and to how they function both defensively and offensively. And, you know, that extra foul could, you know, I think be the most impactful, you know, just off the cuff.
I think that's a good one. Just so you know, I said that the thing you should look for is that your top player signs his Supermax deal. That's what the number one seed should get.
I am all cool for that one. I'm in. That should be it.
See, it just shows where we come at this. That's what Mike offering. I was saying you should make sure they serve Spotted Cow in every arena you have down there because that would be on brand.
I've learned, you know, I'm finishing my second year here, and the Spotted Cow here is definitely my drink of choice. If I'm going the beer route, it's the best.
It's the way to go.
Listen, you learn something new every day. I was a couple of years ago when I learned how good Spotted Cow was.
Excellent stuff.
So once that, bring it down.
Yeah.
Fill it up in Orlando. Let's go. The Bucks are going to have a huge advantage. Mike, we appreciate your time this morning, and obviously we look forward to hopefully getting this decided real soon and seeing the resumption of the season with you guys as the number one seed in the East. Thanks for being with us. Be well and be safe, okay?
Great. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.